We'll make a start. Just welcome members that are here tonight to the meeting. There is a public meeting taking place in Newry tonight to do with the Daisy Hill A&E. So it explains why there's certain members not here. And we're glad to welcome two representatives from NIE tonight, Colm Feeney. This is Clans to Far End Network Performance and Safety Division, and Rodney Ballantyne, and Rodney is the Network Operations Manager. There's just a couple of formalities I have to do, and one is just regarding the proceedings of the meeting will be audio recorded. Members are reminded that they're personally responsible for any comments that they make at the meeting. I would remind councillors of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the meeting today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the table for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. Okay, so, yeah, I just ask Liam just to mention about the quorum.
Just to say, members, the quorum for our council meeting is 11 members. We have 9 members at this point in time, but given that this meeting is a presentation meeting to take on information, and won't be making any decisions, I'm suggesting we move ahead with the meeting. I think Gareth suggested there's 5 out of 7 DAs represented here, so we have a good cross-section of councillors from each of the political parties. So I think that probably on the basis of there, the record of information will be circulated to members. And again, I'm sure our colleagues from NIE will be happy to take any points up if it's been raised following on from the discussion.
Okay, thanks, Liam. I have apologies here from councillors Andrews, Mernon, Stokes, Tinnelly and Walker. Any further apologies? Okay.
Apologies for all of you.
Okay. Apart from
myself alone.
Okay. Colm, I think we're ready to. Yep. Sorry. Sorry. Oh yes. Okay. Thank you. So I think we're ready for the presentation now. So thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, I would like to thank the Chair and the Council members for allowing NIE Networks to present here tonight. I suppose the introductions, myself, Colm Feeney, I'm Network Performance and Safety Director at NIE Networks, and I'm in the industry about 20 plus years. Rodney here to my left, Rodney works for me, and he's Network Operations Manager, and he's in a lot longer than me. I'm still trying to work out why he's younger looking than me and actually has far more years work behind him, but whenever I get to that, I'll retire. The presentation is fourfold. It's in terms of who we are and what we do, I plan to take that. Then there's a couple of slides on work in your area and investment we've done over the last number of years. Rodney's going to take that, and he's also going to take storm response, because we think storm response is a very important thing for both councils and customers in the local areas. And then our investment plans for the future. We're about to embark on our next price control, which runs for 6.5 years, and you know, some of that investment does affect local areas. We want to give you a sense of some of the things that are in that investment plan. So in terms of who we are and what we do, we don't generate or supply electricity. So if you kind of look at some of the things that NIE Networks is responsible for, whenever the lights go out, there's power cuts, we're the company that has to get the power back on, whether it's during normal conditions or during severe weather conditions. We're responsible for network maintenance and development, and we have about 50,000 kilometres of network out there that has to be maintained on a regular basis. And if you're taking that network today and you wanted to replace it, it's the modern equivalent asset value of about 5 billion. So, you know, it's a huge network that has to be maintained. We also do meter reading and all the metering and connection of renewables with responsibility for that. And as you're probably aware, there's about 1,200 megawatts of renewables already connected, which is about 25% of electricity usage in Northern Ireland. And that's against the target that was set by DERI at about 2010 through the Strategic Energy Framework, where there'd be 40% of consumption by 2020 would be by renewable sources, and we're well on our way to connect that. And then, you know, we're also responsible for connections business, and, you know, that market's about to open up to competition now. Any connection above 5 megawatts is now already, you know, a number of third parties can actually do those connections now for customers. There's about 13 ICPs, there's independent connection providers now registered in Northern Ireland, and that market's going to be totally opened up on March 18, where people are able to go to other, not only NIE networks, they'll be able to go to other companies to get new connections done. So, in terms of the next slide, I suppose we have 860,000 connected customers. About 790,000 of those are domestic customers, and about 70,000 are business customers. We've over 1,200 employees, that's direct employees. Currently, we've about another 1,000 contractors working on the network on a daily basis. 300 major substations, as I said earlier, nearly 49,000 kilometres of network. Network charges are less than a quarter of your electricity bill. So the electricity bill is made up mostly of generation costs, network costs, and then supply costs. And so that changes depending on whether you're, you know, a domestic customer, a business customer, a very large energy user. The more electricity you actually use, the less the network charges are. So some of our really large energy users in Northern Ireland, the network costs are about 5% of the bill. And then we invest about $100 million in the network annually. So I said earlier that our modern equivalent asset value is about $5 billion. So if you're spending $100 million a year in capex, you're probably getting around the network in 50 years. So, you know, on average, assets last about 40 years. Some last longer, some last shorter. So that's the kind of principle. I'm going to hand over to Rodney now, and he's going to take us through the next couple of slides, and then I'll finish up later on. Thanks.
Thanks, Colin. Okay, folks. Since 2012, the start of the current price control, we've spent about £5 million in uranium more. This money has included the replacement of 11 kV switchboard and flood and reinforcement defences at Newry North substation. We've also completed the installation of a new 3311 transformer at Bessbrook North and laid 2.5 kilometres of LV underground cable and recovered underneath conductors from Warren Point Town Centre. During 2017, we're planning to build a new 11 kV circuit between Derrylaggat and Mayo Bridge, and another 11 kV circuit between Bishop's Court Central Substation and Ardglass. We aim to get this work done by the end of quarter 3 2017. We also have plans in place to build a new 33 kV line between Ballinhinch Main and Seaford. Hopefully get this work done by the end of 17. As part of our ongoing refurbishment programmes, we have refurbished 950 kilometres of 33 and 11 kV overhead network in Newry and Mourne over the last 5 years. And with our meter replacement programme, to date, approximately 18,000 homes and businesses in the Newry and Mourne council area have been targeted for replacement because their meters are reaching the end of their useful life. We have replaced some 60% of these to date, with the remainder due in the remainder of 2017. And then as other meters become end of life, they'll be replaced as well. Storm response. Since 2012, we've experienced 5 major storms across Northern Ireland. The largest of these being the snowstorm in March 2013, which some of you may remember, when across Northern Ireland, 150,000 customers lost their supplies. More recently, we had a lightning storm on the 6th and 7th of June 2016, which caused more than 80 HV faults in the network, which compared with the 400 HV faults that we had during the snowstorm on March 13. Storm Doris, more recently again on the 23rd of February 2017, caused in total 220 faults. That included HD and LD faults, affecting 21,000 customers across the province. More locally, Newry and Downpatrick had 4,500 customers off supply during Storm Doris. Northern Ireland didn't experience the worst of it, because some areas in South Wales and the southwest of England have 350,000 customers off supply. We have an emergency plan which is reviewed every year. We receive bespoke forecasts from the Met Office 3 times a week, given information on wind speeds, lightning risk, etc. across Northern Ireland. Based on these forecasts, we will, if required, plan our storm response and escalate additional resources as required. During the day, we have dedicated fault emergency resources to attend faults, and each week we have circa 65 staff on standby as our first line of response in dealing with faults right across Northern Ireland. Everyone in the NIE networks has two roles, a normal day role and a storm role. Again, an employee and an accountant during the day might be one of our call handling volunteers during the escalation, and we revealed of this during Storm Doris. One of the things that we have on our website, nienetworks.co.uk, is our power check maps, which provides up-to-date information on how our teams are responding and repairing power cuts right across Northern Ireland. It displays faults affecting 10 or more properties, and you can zoom in and see the detail of the fault that's ongoing. Just to give you some, every year we receive about 230,000 calls to our emergency number 03457643643. We receive about 100 calls a month to our elected representatives hotline number. We currently have just under 7,000 followers on Twitter, and in 2017 to date, about 10% of our faults are logged online rather than people ringing us in, and in 2016 that was about 8%, so we can see over time the number of people logging, doing things online is slowly ramping up. Preparation resources. We do a storm simulation each year, which is a day when we test our systems, test our processes across each of our 12 LICs, and just to give people a refresher on how to deal with a big storm, a big escalation, that test our IT and our people and our systems and processes. We have arrangements in place for additional 4x4 vehicles and helicopters, and lessons learned from previous storms are incorporated into our preparations and updated as necessary into our emergency plan. As Colin mentioned earlier, we have just over 1,200 employees within NIE networks. They're split out in that high level table there. We have about 200 in our call handling pool of volunteers. We have 750 in the field, and we have about 300 in our 12 local centres dealing with faults in those particular areas. And if required, and for major events, we can avail of additional resources from our sister company ESB Networks and from the GBDNOs in the mainland and other third party contractors. And then locally, we have an arrangement with BT, Phoenix Gas, and Northern Ireland Water that we can share resources in times of mutual need. So, probably just to give you some summary of the March 13 snowstorm was the biggest event we have experienced in recent years. Yourselves here in Downpatrick would have been probably one of the worst affected areas, and it was the Slieve Crib Mountain and the Vodafone mast, or the telecom mast on Slieve Crib Mountain, were the last customers to be restored on the 25th of March 2013, and they were restored where we had to get a helicopter and we flew resources and materials and up to the top of the mountain to get the line rebuilt to get the power supply restored to those that are telecom masts. Said earlier, 150,000 customers affected by more than 1,400 faults in the network. Almost 600 faults required repairs, with 100 poles being replaced and 23 kilometres of overhead line being used during those repairs. Over the 4 days, we took 66,000 calls into our call centre in Craigallan. And at any one time, we had up to 70 call handlers taking calls. We contacted 500 critical care customers who were off supply as a result of the storm. We had 93% of the customers restored within 24 hours and 99% within 48 hours. And Storm Doris, just to give you something more recent, albeit a much smaller event, we had 99% of customers restored within 12 hours and everybody back on within 24 hours. And during those escalations, our media team communicate with the broadcast and the press media to keep them and customers up to date. And updates were provided on Twitter as well. Restoring power to your community. The restoration is prioritised so that the largest number of customers are restored first. So damage to high voltage transmission and distribution lines occurs. Once these have then are restored, being looked at smaller groups of customers, these repairs can be hampered due to inaccessibility as you work closely with DFI and 4x4 and helicopter providers. And it's come back to March 13 snowstorm. You know, the local guys worked very closely with the local guys from DFI and got roads cleared so that we could get in and restore power to customers. And then individual homes and small communities without power, but keep in contact with them and then get them back on once the main line backbones are restored. And then this little map shows high level or 12 LICs across Northern Ireland. We have two. The one in Newry looks after Newry LIC in Carnbean Industrial Estate, and then we have our Downpatrick LIC, which is in our Ballinahinch main substation on the Crabtree Road. And then I'd just like to hand back to Colin.
Thanks, Robin. I suppose you just said at the start we're happy to supposed to take questions right before there'll be an opportunity to ask questions at the end. So one of the main reasons why we're here tonight is, you know, do you discuss our investment plans over the next 6.5 years? As I said earlier, we're a monopoly business. Therefore we're the regulator, utility regulator, sets our, you know, allowances for investing on the network over the next number of years. We're in our 6th regulatory price control. We're about to go on to another run from September 17 to March 2024. So it's a long time, 6.5 years, and when the price control is set, then that's what we're allowed to invest in the network over that period of time. So I suppose in setting out our business plan for the next 6.5 years, we went through a disciplined process where, you know, utility regulator set out an approach document, and some of the stuff was taken, you know, learning from GB and what Ofgem do, and looking at, what we should be investing in and setting our allowances. And some of the other things that fed into that was naturally energy policy. I mentioned earlier about how energy policy set the direction for renewables. Just to be clear, NIE don't set energy policy, we follow it. It's usually set by DfE, and obviously the regulator has to put the necessary allowances around the energy policy. In terms of stakeholder engagement, this is the first time we had, in any price control, we had an extensive stakeholder engagement process as part of this price control. We engaged a market research company, Perceptive Insights, and in conjunction with Queen's University, we done research on willingness to pay. We engaged with 1,200 domestic customers and 500 business customers across Northern Ireland to look at areas where they felt it was important for NIE to invest in over the next 6.5 years and where they're willing to pay for that investment. And there's a slide in that later on, we'll hopefully put a bit of context in that. External expert reports, we have to look into GB and look at, you know, what they're doing and engage a lot of external consultants to determine, you know, to support our business plan and give a UK context. Long-term asset management, whenever you're looking after managing a network like NIEs, but like, you know, same as Northern Ireland Water, these are long-run assets that deteriorate over a long period of time. So you not only have to look at you know, what current customers pay, but you also have to look at future customers. So, you know, you can't do too much investment today because customers pay too much, but also you can't kick the can down the road and actually get future customers to pay too much. So there's an important balance, and that way we look at, you know, long-term asset management. In terms of growth of low-carbon technologies, there's you know, research out there in the UK and beyond, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, where over the next number of years, they believe there's going to be a significant uptake in solar, electric vehicles, and renewable heat. And we engaged EA Technology, a company from England, who, you know, the leader in this in terms of doing research for other companies across the world. And they took, you know, the Northern Ireland network and looked at, you know, how that could potentially grow and the impact that growth and low carbon technologies is going to have on investment needs in the network, and that's part of our business plan as well. And obviously we take a lot of learning from GB, because the way Northern Ireland, part of the UK, we were privatised around the same time, and the industry was set up much the same way as the rest of the UK, and so there's a lot of learning from GB. And ultimately we're delivering for customers, because customers actually pay the bills. You know, different customers pay a certain amount towards the network portion of the bill, but ultimately we're doing this for customers. In terms of, you know, this just gives you some kind of context in terms of our capital investment. If you look at that, there's probably about, you know, 500 million we're going to invest in the network over the next six and a half years. And as you can see, 55% of it is actually asset replacement, where you're actually replacing older assets. And then, you know, you've a ring there for new safety legislation. I'll not go through all of those, but just kind of gives you context. You know, there's new legislation coming through in Northern Ireland that's following GB. It's called ESQCR legislation, where it's more onerous in terms of continuity of supply. So, you know, we have to maintain and upgrade our network to a higher standard. You know, for example, safety clearances around in public areas where, you know, where people are at higher risk of coming into contact with the red lines. This legislation has put more onus on the utility business to actually mitigate against those risks. The other thing is about 12% of our expenditure is on metering, and 10% there is on network reinforcement, where we have to always, you know, we have to look at load growth across Northern Ireland, and the load growth across Northern Ireland on average might only be 0.7% per annum. You know, it could be 4% in Ballymena, and it could be minus 4% in Armagh, and over a 6.5 year period that could lead to 25% load growth or load reduction, and that leads to significant investment in the network. In terms of our proposed programme, in terms of our investment plan and what we're investing in, as I said earlier, our asset replacement is our biggest expenditure. Then our ESQCR, I mentioned the new legislation that came into force in Northern Ireland in 2012. It's been in GB since 2002, so we're slightly behind the curve in that legislation coming in Northern Ireland, but it requires a significant amount of investment. Distribution load, I mentioned that a low annual load growth is only 0.7% per annum. It goes up and down and across Northern Ireland, so we have responsibility for ensuring that, you know, underlying load growth, that there's enough investment in the network to meet that. 33 kV congestion, due to the amount of renewable generators that have connected to the low voltage network in Northern Ireland, there's a significant amount of congestion on our higher voltage networks, and we have some investment in that within our business plan. And then I mentioned the low carbon technology, where we engage EA Technology to look at the growth in electric vehicles, solar, and renewable heat over the next 6.5 years. And then some additional investment, transmission load. In case you aren't aware, there's a company in Northern Ireland, Sony, System Operator Northern Ireland, who have responsibility for planning and operating the transmission network. That's the TIR network. Although we own the assets and actually maintain them, they have the responsibility for operating and planning them. So, for example, you know, the North-South Interconnector, Sony has put the responsibility to take that project through planning and through consents. And then if that materialises, I know it's going through a public hearing at the moment, but if that project proceeds through to actually construction, then NIE has got the responsibility then to finance that project and build it, and then them costs are recovered through tariffs over the next 40 years. And then the optional investment, that's covered in the next slide, and that's the investment that has been concluded from our stakeholder engagement process. So if you take, as I said earlier, we had a CEAP group, and that included people from Northern Ireland Network, Northern Ireland Electricity Networks, ourselves, the utility regulator, the Department for, or DETI at the time, or the Department for the Economy now, and CCNI. So it was, a process which, was overseen by all those important stakeholders. So this is not, NIE's views of the world. It was overseen by CEAP. We engaged a market research company in conjunction with Queen's University, and we interviewed, 1,200 domestic customers and 500 business customers, and we looked at willingness to pay. And the kind of things that were coming back from that was that we should have some kind of targeted program to strengthen the 11 kV overhead line network. A lot of our network is very remote. There's about 20,000 kilometres of 11 kV overhead line. It's very prone to ice accretion risk during ice storms. And there's a view that we should be looking at. There's three areas in Northern Ireland that are most at risk to ice accretion. That's the Moorings, Dunfermline Plateau, and the Sperrins. And the view is that we should do some target investment costing $25 million in this price control. They reckon we should be doing more in terms of increased flood defence. It's not a particular issue in Northern Ireland, but a lot of this maybe, the time we were doing this, there was a fair amount of, publicity and certainly in the GB news and around the northwest of England where, there was a significant amount of flooding. We have some flooding expenditure in the core plan, but, customers believe we should be doing more. Accelerated tree cutting, that's tree cutting associated with the risk of trees falling on top of lines during major storms, and that was the case the same. We have a 25-year program, over 25 years. They said we should be reducing that for 20 years, about 700k, and we're just unplanned power cuts. Although a privatisation on average, customers, that's about 20 years ago, would seem on average 3 hours of supply interruptions associated with faults, and about the same for planned work. Today, that's about 60 minutes. So on average in Northern Ireland, a customer will see 1 hour per year interruptions to the power associated with faults, and then about another hour associated with planned work to get maintenance and that done. Now, both that's been reduced significantly, but you must bear in mind that people that are in urban areas see a much better supply than people in rural areas, just the nature of the network. Overhead lines are much prone to faults. So you could see, someone in Belfast might not see a fault for 20 years. Someone in Newry and this area could see, faults 4 and 5 times a year. And I suppose the stakeholders were telling us that we should do more to reduce power cuts in areas where, where people are more prone to power supply interruptions, which is rural Northern Ireland. And I suppose in terms of this optional investment, we've put that through in our business plan. It's not part of our core plan. It's very much so up to the utility regulator, based on what the stakeholder engagement was saying, to make a decision on whether this should be allowed in our investment plan over the next 6.5 years. So finally, in terms of conclusions, both we're working for today's customers, hopefully in terms of, what we do and power, supply interruptions and all the things that we're doing in terms of meter reading and connecting customers for new supplies, etc., upgraded supplies. And we're also planning for tomorrow's. And, this business plan has gone through a process now where, we've submitted our business plan. The utility regulator has publicised their draft determination, and all stakeholders have an opportunity to respond to that consultation by the 19th of May this year, where they can give their views on it, and then we'll move to final determination later this year, and that price control is meant to start in the 1st of October 2017 and run to March 2024. We're a 24/7 customer focused business, and you know, both our employees are working in your area every day based on what Rodney said. So, I mean, that's the basis of our presentation. Thanks a lot for listening, and we're very happy to take any questions. Hopefully, we'll be able to answer them, but if we can't answer them, we'll make a commitment to follow up with anything that we can't answer directly. So, thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Colin and Rodney, for that fairly comprehensive presentation and your future plans. Now, no doubt there's some questions. I'll take two councillors first of all. Councillor Harvey.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Colin, Rodney, thanks for your attendance and for your presentation tonight. First comment, just a few comments, a few questions. The first comment would be your photograph of your storm response picture. I thought you would put an electric on the moon. Look at the picture. But we recently done a visit to Craigavon call centre, which was very interesting. We've seen firsthand, you know, the calls coming in, and your response. I was very impressed with all the screens and your, you know, how the whole process works. I was very impressed with that. Just a question on windmills or wind turbines. Do they cause you any problems or any grief, you know, with overload, or how do you collar? In other words, like they're all spinning at the same time. How do you collar that electricity up? You know? Thank you.
Yeah, I suppose, I mean, that's one of the challenges facing the industry now. If you look historically, a lot of the power used to be coming from two or three big conventional generators, and it was all flowing the one way, and now power flows multi-directional. It does cause challenges in the network, and I suppose if you take some of the challenges in terms of connecting that, is that, you know, in terms of connection policy in Northern Ireland, which we don't decide upon, you know, the connecting customer pays for the voltage they connect at, any infrastructure investment at the voltage they connect at on the next voltage up, and then the body of customers in Northern Ireland pay for the next voltage up. So there has been a fair amount of challenges, especially for the small turbines that are connecting at the 11 kV and LV, actually getting them connected to the grid, you know, because there's a significant amount of congestion now in the 33 kV network because of that. But you must put that in the context of the amount that actually has been connected across Northern Ireland. We've as much renewables connected in Northern Ireland per head of connected customer anywhere in the UK. And then whenever that renewable generation is connected, yes, it does create challenges in terms of all the power flows. And the other thing we also have to be mindful of, today we have about 1,250 megawatts of renewable generation connected, and we have another maybe 500 in the system that's going to be connected over the next couple of years. That's bringing it up towards 1,700, 1,800 megawatts. That's our maximum demand in Northern Ireland, and our Summer Valley low is only 500 megawatts. So if you take a summer night where Northern Ireland customers are only need 500 megawatts, and all those turbines are turning and producing 1,250 megawatts, or in a couple of years' time, 1,800 megawatts, that's a potential of 1,300 megawatts of waste if you don't have the grid strong enough to actually cycle that to the south of Ireland or some other jurisdiction that can actually sell that electricity. So, you know, I suppose the studies have been done in terms of the benefits of renewable generation and actually carbon footprint benefits. Actually, you know, it doesn't cost anything in terms of you're not paying for coal. But, you know, we all have to be mindful that the more of this you connect, it creates a lot of challenges around, you know, how do you use the spare capacity whenever it's not needed in Northern Ireland? And if you want to use it, you have to be able to invest significantly in your transmission infrastructure. And that's one of the other requirements of the North-South Interconnector, is that you're strongly interconnected with another jurisdiction. And then if Republic Ireland are connected into Wales or connected into France, then you have the opportunity to cycle that. Because if that energy is constrained off, then it's inefficient and it's cost money to constrain it off. So, you know, there is a significant amount of challenges, but, you know, I think there's been more positives than negatives around the connection of renewables, so hopefully that answers your question.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Enright.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think you're aware, Chairperson, of my interest in this subject, so you won't be surprised to hear I have more than one question. Yes, just a couple of points First of all, are you aware of the fact in 2018 no public authority or any government agency will be able to build buildings without following the nearly zero energy code? So basically all public sector buildings will have to essentially power themselves. I'm wondering, what do you have steps in place to ensure that you can deliver connectivity for the new building code for new public sector buildings that are required to be zero or nearly zero energy? Do you want to take that separately, or should I go on and call a few more out?
Well, I mean, I can take that now. I mean, so what you're saying is that these buildings will actually use no net energy from the grid?
By law, all public sector bodies will be required to build zero energy buildings. So if the council was building a new building, it would be expected to produce its own power by CHP or photovoltaics or whatever the case might be. Does that cause you guys a problem? Are you aware of the building code coming in 2018?
Yeah, well, I suppose we are. But at the end of the day, I suppose the challenge for us and the challenge for consumers is going to be around how you actually, determine how tariffs are going to work. Because, for example, if you're going to invest in the grid to maintain it for, because not all customers will be able to be the same as those buildings, so they'll need a certain amount of energy. But if you get to a position where a number of buildings or a number of consumers are actually not net users of electricity, then they're not paying anything for actually network costs. So ultimately what happens then, the view in GB at the minute, what may happen is that we'll have to move away from actually volumetric tariff structures to something where it's actually capacity and volumetric, because we hear a lot and I suppose when we're out talking to customers about people being more self-sufficient and wanting to come off the grid. But realistically, they don't want to come off the grid. They want an insurance policy that the grid's always going to be there if their CHP plant or if their PV or whatever actually fails. And for us to maintain a network that actually is on standby will require to be maintained. So there is a lot of challenges, and I think that the biggest challenge will be around how you actually sculpt tariffs and make sure then that they recover the monies from all customers to maintain that approach. But I'm supportive of the concept where people have to use less energy, but there is challenges around how the network's going to be funded to support that.
I did actually search your website before the meeting, and I discovered you had no policy on this, and it would appear to me that NIE are actually unaware of the impact of the nearly zero energy building code. So could I ask you formally to advise council in writing of how you're going to tackle the 2018 building code for public service buildings?
Yes, yeah? We'll follow up on that.
Okay, the second point is that I'm looking at the heat map here for our council area, and I can see that Downpatrick and Newry are not in the red zone. And I'm aware of the fact that both the second phase of Newry Leisure Centre and the new Downpatrick Leisure Centre have been told, according to council staff, that they can't get connectivity for photovoltaics. Now, I've written to both you and the council under the Freedom of Information Act requesting sight of the document that says that you are refusing council connectivity for photovoltaics on the roofs of our two new leisure centres, and I haven't received a reply back yet. My own feeling is that since these two leisure centres are not in a heat red area on your heat map, no such refusal has been made. But anyway, I'm leaving that with you as well. Okay. Thirdly, last year we had a presentation talking about the £25 million that was being put into County Derry, the £30 million that was being put into County Tyrone, and the £20 million that was being put into County Antrim to upgrade the grid. And councillors were aware here that our area from Carlingford Lock all the way to Strangford Lock have hundreds of businesses that run diesel generators to generate electricity. Any of our major employers. And in fact, it's not just big fish factories or engineering firms in Ardglass or engineering firms in Kilkeel that are affected. Even dairy farms have to run diesel engines to generate electricity. And the question we put last year, and we haven't received a reply on it yet, was what plans do you have for our council area to ensure that in future businesses operating along the South Down coast don't have to run diesel engines to generate electricity? So I can't remember if it was you or that Stoney came along, but we never got an answer. Okay?
Well, I can't comment. I suppose, you know, in terms of the, you know, you make comparisons there with Derry and Strabane, I suppose, you know, in any given cycle and the price control, you know, investment will go up in certain areas just depending on where the asset cycle or the amount of assets were built in that area maybe 40 or 50 years ago and when they're coming to the end of their asset life. In terms of, you know, customers connecting to the grid, whether it's new customers or existing customers that are looking for additional capacity, just to be clear, NIE don't make connection policy. Connection policy, you know, is decided upon by the regulator, and as I said earlier, you know, the connecting party pays for the voltage to connect that, the next voltage up, and then the body of customers pay for the next voltage up in terms of that's covered by our load investment, our capital allowances. So, I mean, that's the way it is. If there's specific examples where customers feel that NIE aren't following that policy, you know, we're I'm certainly more than happy to take that up personally and I'll follow up on that. But
well, I can give you dozens of examples where businesses have to use diesel generators in our council area from a whole variety of towns. And I'm surprised you aren't aware of this.
Well,
do you want me to give you a list of businesses? Not tonight, but if you want a list of businesses and villages where people have to do this?
Yeah, I'm very happy to take them, and I'll also be very happy.
Can I supply it through the council clerk so we can get a formal reply?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. I noticed that you're talking about the connection between Bishop's Court and Ardglass. Now, I noticed that the Bishop's Court 33 kilovolt station is one of those that is in severe difficulty with regard to connectivity. People can't get onto it because it's oversubscribed. I'm just wondering, first of all, are you talking about a 33 kilovolt line replacing the 11 kilovolt line? And if so, what's the possibility of a 110 kilovolt line replacing the 33 kilovolt line to Bishop's Court? Because we have severe difficulties in East Lochale. It's bright red on the map, and we can't get connectivity. I'm also aware of the fact there's an attempt to have an energy storage, planning applications for energy storage devices in that area as well. Are you aware of that, and in what way are you facilitating it?
If I take that, it's a new 11 kV surrogate between Bishop Court Central and Ardglass. It's not a 33 surrogate, it's a new 11 kV.
The 11 kilovolt line already exists, so you're just replacing what's there. But we've got big difficulties in Ardglass where significant businesses, all the fishing factories, for instance, have to run diesel generators because you can't supply them with electricity when the fish come in.
Yeah, and what I'd say to that, within our business plan, there's investment also to alleviate congestion on the 33 kV grid, and that's a specific, you know, request we've put the regulator in this price control to alleviate some of that. But you know, the challenge, you know, in terms of moving from 33, you mentioned, you know, moving from 33 to 110 kV. That'll be very much dictated by underlying load growth, and also people, you know, there's significant opposition for building, you know, 110 kV tower lines compared to, you know, upgrading existing or building new 33 kV lines. So, you know, and those challenges are mostly local. You know, we see it in the north-south, and people have legitimate concerns about new transmission lines being built. So all that has to be considered as well. So, like, I don't believe there's any plans to upgrade Bishop's Court to 110 kV.
In which case, you're simply replacing the existing 11 kilovolt line with a new one. In actual fact, that's not going to do any good for the fact that people can't get connectivity in the East Lochale area.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not prepared to, you know, answer that on the basis that, you know, it's been done for a reason, so it will help some customers. They say it won't help any. Will it help all the ones that you're looking for to help? That'll depend on, you know, connection policy, as I said earlier. I'm happy to follow you up on the specifics of those customers.
I'll route that through the clerk. You'll be glad to hear I'm coming to an end. With regard to energy storage, you mentioned the fact that we're coming into the stage now where at night time, Northern Ireland will be generating more electricity than it can consume from renewables. That's already obviously happened in Scotland and Germany and several other countries. But we don't have storage capacity in Northern Ireland the way they do in Scotland or in the Republic. I've been writing to both Sony and yourselves on the fact that NIE still owns the Camlock Tunnel under Camlock Lake. The council is in the process of taking possession of the bed of Camlock Lake. Now, the energy storage facility in Camlock was abandoned during the Troubles because they felt it wasn't safe to work there. But the tunnel was completed, and we own the lake. So clearly, between yourselves and ourselves, we now own everything, and indeed we have a tunnel worth something, as far as I can tell, something in the region of £20 million to run the storage facilities between ourselves and yourselves. Could you come back to us with a response on what can be done with Camlock Tunnel, given the fact that you own it and we own the surrounding land?
Just on that, I suppose, from our perspective, you've mentioned a good few times that you've written to NIE and Sony on a number of occasions. I'd really appreciate it if you could, whenever you're addressing us to the clerk, that you give the dates of the
church
and the people within NIE that you wrote to, and just confirm that in each one of those occasions that you didn't get a response.
Although I got a response confirming the fact you do own the tunnel.
But there was a number of, you know, there's been a number of queries there, four or five different queries, where I think there's been a kind of consistency that you've talked to NIE, you've wrote to them, and consistently they haven't written back to you.
You replied to me on that one. You do own the tunnel.
Yeah. Yes, I'll do, but I will come to the tunnel. The view, just to give you an NIE perspective, NIE may have been involved in this at a point in time whenever we had generation pre-privatisation, we had generation supply interests. The view, and this mightn't be the view that'll materialise down the road, but the view in the UK and in Europe at the moment is that a network business should not own storage, because there's an opportunity that they could, you know, stifle the market in terms of, because they could, we should be a facilitator of storage, that private investors should actually own storage, and then the network business wouldn't be treating storage any more favourably than other technologies. So the view is, so I'm just giving you that.
I agree. The problem we have is that you own the tunnel, we own the land, and no one is managing it as a storage facility. It's an extremely valuable asset, and the pair of us are wasting it between us.
Yeah, understood.
This is my last point.
Because this is a public meeting, I just want to make for information. We are in the process of vesting Camlock Lake. We have not vested Camlock Lake yet. We may be in a challenge process in terms of vesting, so we do not own Camlock Lake.
With regard to Ballykinner Base, it's my understanding that you were required originally to have a 33 kilovolt station in and around about the base, and the base is now being decommissioned. Will that mean that the farmers in that area will now have access to that area to have additional connectivity for renewable energy projects?
In terms of, you know, there's 300 of these major substations in Northern Ireland, 3311 kV substations, so, you know, it'd be wrong to be pretending on something here that I know about spare capacity, never won. So I think it needs to be added to your list, and I'm quite happy to come back on that one as well.
Great, thank you. Councillor Clark.
All right, thanks, Chair. Thanks for your presentation, gentlemen. Before I ask a couple of questions, I'd just like to mention about the electric reps direct line. It's an excellent service. And very useful for elected representatives, you know, for communicating with the public. So take that back very, very pleased with the communication. And in regards to my comments or questions, have you any percentages of what the current condition of the infrastructure is in our area, in our council area? I'm talking about, you mentioned the end-of-life infrastructure. And what I'm really thinking of is in regards to replacement of the wooden pole infrastructure in towns and villages. That would predominantly be the, you know, the infrastructure we have in place. So have you a scheduled maintenance in regards to that? Is there a schedule available even to elected reps in regards to that? So we again can update members of the public when works will be carried out. I mentioned another one now is in regards to in scenic areas and parks. You know, obviously our areas, you know, with number of areas outstanding natural beauty, number of parks, high quality scenic parks. What's the process of trying to get overhead cables underground in them circumstances where, you know, visually they're taken away from that view? Is there a process, or is that only an opportunity to do that is through planned maintenance? Is there an opportunity at that stage to do it?
Thanks for this positive feedback on the direct line. In terms of your two questions, in terms of overhead line infrastructure, the approach that we take is we patrol the network across Northern Ireland on a 15-year cycle. So we have a 15-year refurbishment program and also a 45-year rebuild program. So, you know, that kind of approach is still in good stead. I suppose you take over the last 20 years, our interruptions have gone down by 66%. So there's nothing to tell us that this council area is getting any better or any worse in service in terms of detecting worn assets and getting those worn assets replaced. And I suppose so that's the approach. It's, you know, it could be a circuit, a patroller could be out in a circuit here in Uri next week, and then there could be one in Enniskillen the following week, and that's the way we do it. And that's kind of industry standard. You know, different companies maybe have different time cycles, but so hopefully that gives you a bit of confidence that, you know, we're doing it in a holistic approach across Northern Ireland, and hopefully it's not discriminating against the lines in Uri. In terms of your question around scenic areas, in terms of undergrounding existing infrastructures and areas of outstanding natural beauty and ASSSIs, I suppose this, as I understand, was one of the things that was considered as part of the stakeholder engagement, and it didn't get any support in terms of the money that we had actually spent to actually underground the lines. I know in terms of new infrastructure, there's certain planning conditions in terms of, you know, you have to go through if we're building new lines in areas of outstanding natural beauty or ASSIs. But in terms of undergrounding those lines, I mean, it's something that was considered a part of the stakeholder engagement and there wasn't support. So there's nothing within our business plan that's going to proactively underground existing overhead lines in areas of outstanding natural beauty and ASSIs.
Okay.
Councillor
Carr.
Just on the last point that you were making about, you know, overhead lines and underground ones, and I've had a number of complaints since that filed back about in the States where the birds are coming and landing on the lines they got there, and the droppings are going down on footpaths and on areas where children are playing and got there. So I take it now that that will never be changed. That policy will not be changed with inside the States, because, I mean, there is quite concern of one estate here in Downpatrick. Another factor in relation to our grass, we used to have lots of breakdowns, and I must compliment you on this now at the present time, because we had, it's a long, long time since we had a breakdown in service, so that you've repaired that problem, and I hope it stays repaired. But just come back to the other ones, because I had a number of complaints in relation to birds on the lines, just over buildings and dropping. I'm sure you had a number yourself too as well.
Yeah.
But I just
a question?
Yeah, I mean it's a very good question, and it's a very important one. And again, you know, through the stakeholder engagement, this is one thing that came up, bird fouling, because it's a really prevalent issue for people that are affected by it. And you know, I suppose not to try to defend NIE's position, but you tend to find with a lot of the complaints that we get around bird fouling, is actually the electricity infrastructure was there before the house that went in underneath it. So probably there's a challenge for all of us in terms of, you know, planning policy and actually allowing infrastructure to be built in under overhead lines. I suppose I think the challenge is back to council. There's a couple of good points made. There's one made on the, you know, on the ASSIs and AONBs. There's good points being made around, you know, 33 kV congestion, and there's points being made around bird fouling. And I say, I think the challenge for council is that there's an opportunity for youths, you know, youths are a respected stakeholder. There's a consultation that's out to the 19th of May. It's available on UR's website. And if people feel strongly that, you know, there should be investment in local areas to underground lines for bird fouling, that there should be underground lines of areas of outstanding natural beauty, or ASSIs, or they believe that connection policy should be changed, there should be more done to connect, you know, renewable generators, or, you know, how we address, should there be something different around, you know, load investment, then I believe the council should be riding in as part of that process, because there's an opportunity for youth to influence an expenditure, because ultimately we're a regulated business, and the regulator will set our allowances and decide, well, you spend on X and you don't spend on Y. So I feel, but I just want to caution that in terms of the AONBs and the bird fouling, some of those have already been through the stakeholder engagement. So they're really difficult issues for the people that are affected by them. But the view is that the body of customers are not prepared to pay to underground those lines to address those issues. But I would encourage, if there's particular issues, and there's a number of been raised tonight, that, you know, the council should feel empowered to respond to the draft determination for utility regulators.
I take what you're saying, and I understand what you're doing, and probably we will take your advice here in council. But in relation to the people who are suffering now from the situation, is there anything that can be done on the lines themselves to try and deter that situation?
Sorry, maybe I didn't address that well enough. I suppose there isn't a huge amount to be done, because if you, in terms of, you know, we were a member of the Energy Networks Association, which is a company, a trade association for all UK distribution network organisations. So we know the kind of technologies out there to alleviate bird fouling and overhead lines that are going to stay in situ. And there isn't a lot more that you can do beyond what we're doing in terms of fitting bird rollers. The issue is that we tend not to fit those in urban areas, because all you're really doing is moving the problem to someone else. So you're solving the problem for customer A and you're moving to customer B. But bear in mind, you know, the overhead lines is a safety factor in terms of what additional loading you can put on them. So any technology that's been used in the UK or beyond today, NIE is using it, but it has its limitations. And we're not prepared to take a situation where, you know, we're solving a problem for one customer and then moving it to another group of customers. So it is a really, really difficult challenge. And I suppose, you know, the way to mitigate against it is actually going forward, we should try to prevent, you know, new buildings being built under lines. And, you know, if there's a view that we should have specific investment for pockets of Northern Ireland where this is prevalent, then something maybe could be, you know, maybe councils could write into the utility regulator.
Okay, I think that's more or less it. Just to be as clarity for myself, Colin,